circle. This is Ed Angelus. We're now in season 2, episode 19 of this podcast. And this time we'll be discussing a very interesting topic about banking services on the cloud. For today's podcast episode, we have invited Mr. Julian Orlean, co-founder, chief operating officer, and head of product from Oradian, a financial inclusion technology company with its head office in Zagreb, Croatia, as he shares with us the exceptional feature of the cloud core banking platform and its significant benefits to our present digital economy. So let's get started. Thank you for listening to FinCircle and welcome to our podcast. For generations, commercial banking was constricted by legacy systems, segmented databases, and the dominance of local branches. This is no longer the case. Banking operations are increasingly expected to be seamlessly available at the press of a button. With the recent pressures for remote working, customer-facing software, and heightened risk mitigation, the industry's need for innovative solutions has become even more pressing. Given this new landscape, banking today is moving increasingly to the cloud, driven in part by advances in fintech and the booming development of new application programming interfaces, or what we call APIs. The industry is looking to adopt the agility, speed, and innovation more commonly found in the technology sector. From account maintenance and loan applications to automated reporting and cash flow management, clients want banking relationships that are not just defined by basic services and brick-and-mortar branches, but by remote capabilities, integrated processes, and flexible systems. The benefits are increasingly evident, such as enhanced customer satisfaction, faster product development, and more agile systems scalability. The move to the cloud can also introduce important capabilities to access and mine data more prolifically, as well as provide opportunities for significant cost reductions through automation. Globally, these advantages are expected to push revenue for the cloud computing industry up to 50%, which is equivalent to $364 billion in revenue from 2019 to 2022. The reality of this cloud-enabled agility was driven home in early 2020 with the introduction of this federally funded Paycheck Protection Program, for instance, which aimed to provide small businesses with critical funding at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic situation, thus installing a new loan application process into one of the systems, as well as testing and adjusting and launching the program was definitely an enormous task. But by working around the clock, they were able to get and running in 36 hours, a feat that wouldn't be unthinkable if we're not running on the cloud. Migrating sensitive functions and data within a financial institution, however, is not a simple undertaking. Ensuring operational security while upgrading legacy system is a difficult and frequently costly endeavor. Internal systems installed independently over the years, as well as concerns about protecting both customer and institutional data, have forced commercial banks to proceed more slowly and carefully than other technology-fed industries. Many in the industry have remained reluctant to rely heavily on the public cloud. Indeed, a 451 research survey at the start of 2019 found that only 18% of the financial institutions had broadly deployed cloud services. In such a highly regulated industry, transferring risk to a third party is always a concern, as data security issues surrounding the transfer of information are paramount. Although a global repository for all customer data might be a banker's dream, regulators remain understandably concerned about the location of data and maintain tight restrictions regarding the residency of customer data and its cross-border transfer. For reasons of both control and security, many institutions restrict the placement of data, applications, and other software programs to the bank's private servers. By embedding their digital operations in an on-site or organization-specific cloud, banking companies can help ensure the strict security that is required to protect financial data and customer information, while providing developers and product managers greater flexibility. And the approach can work well if the institution is well-funded and maintain a huge resources and can also afford the flexibility needed for storage capacity. For other institutions, a move to a public or hybrid cloud platform, combining private and public cloud, provides a more robust solution. Although, even the thought of placing your banking operations in a public cloud was a taboo just a few years ago. And providers today, such as Amazon, Google, Microsoft, or even IBM, can often provide greater security, storage, and innovation through a white-label solution. And few of the recent advances would be possible without the new flurry of fintech entrepreneurs and customer relationship management, content management, and document management are among the processes that have been moved outside many institutions' legacy systems, thanks to a surge of new companies helping unbundle traditional banking operations. So rather than viewing fintech upstarts as a competitors, banks would be better served by accepting them as innovative colleagues that can effectively augment an institution's internal resources. For example, our commitment to economic and environmental sustainability has recently led to a much more successful outcome. By accessing the company's solution to the cloud rather than developing it in-house, it has been more effectively implemented and optimized in terms of banking operations. So for years, every banking company has recognized the customers, both consumer and commercial, increasingly rely on digital access to their financial products. And with the recent pandemic, however, the acceleration of this effort has been extraordinary. So, whether it was moving an array of digital transformation projects forward on our internal list or simply adopting to the acceptance of different DocuSign system-wide, for instance, remote access to files and processes only meant business survival. Having the ability to innovate and launch new products without the expense, time, as well as the risk associated with the on-premises development has been the key factor for a successful initiative. So it's very important to realize and look at the pros and cons, as well as establishing the benefits of each of these initiatives. So for the industry, the rapid development of cloud capabilities made it possible, and there's no reason to believe it will slow anytime soon. In today's podcast episode, we'll be talking to Mr. Julian Orlean, co-founder, COO, and head of product from Oradian, a fintech company servicing banks, as she shares with us the remarkable feature of the cloud core banking platform and its significant contribution to the digital ecosystem. It's great to have you, Julian, and welcome to FinCircle.
Well, thank you for the invitation. Great to be here.
Let's probably start by laying out on what best describes Oradian and the value proposition that it provides in our present digital economy.
Well, at Oradian, we have developed a cloud-based core banking or loan management platform. So we're basically helping different type of financial institutions. So from regulated financial institutions such as rural banks or thrift banks to fintechs or online lenders or also the traditional financial inclusion lending institutions. We provide them with a technology platform, which allows them to run the whole backend of their business. So it basically includes managing all their loans, the deposits if they have, doing the accounting, the reporting, supporting them with loan origination and credit scoring, all the way to complying with regulation. And that basically allows them to double down on the client-facing side, which means either the technology-facing clients, like apps or interaction through social media and web, or physical interaction if it's still a more traditional financial institution.
It has been observed that there are upstream and downstream data dependencies when migrating application to the cloud. Recently, the Philippine Central Bank, or BSP, issued a regulatory guidelines regarding financial data sharing. How do you think Oradian can contribute to this open finance framework that promotes interoperability, consent-driven data portability, and collaboration amongst the stakeholders, particularly the regulators, financial institutions, and fintech solution providers?
Okay. I think there are two sides to the question, right? In terms of data dependencies for migration. So as we're serving all type of financial institutions in many different countries across different continents, obviously there is a lot of different scenarios before we get started and we actually onboard them on the platform. So usually there's a big part in actually cleaning data, which the institutions already have, which they have on traditional records or sometimes on system where they're not really happy with the data consistency. So we support them, we have tools and even some AI, which helps clean that data, make sure that it's structured. The other important element is obviously configuring a system and making sure that these institutions have a setup from day one after they go live on our platform, which makes sure that data is validated properly before actually entering the system. And we support institutions obviously with, let's say, simple validation rules, as well as with integrating to other tools or third-party services, which can automatically validate data. And then, yeah, once the data is in the system, we make sure that it stays consistent, and obviously have it always available in real time to make sure that conclusions can be drawn from that data. And I think that leads us also to the second part of the question, like in terms of open banking, right? I think right now a lot of financial institutions, especially the traditional ones, they are very far from actually complying with such open banking frameworks as they're there, or even just experimenting with it. And the reason is usually that the traditional systems which are in place, they're just not interoperable. Often people within the financial institution, within the bank, cannot even rely on the data they see in the interface. So definitely you don't want to expose that data to other institutions or to the regulator. So a big part of the cleanup and the migration we do when implementing our core banking system is making sure that this data is consistent and is actually readily available in real time. And I think that's true for both for a lot of traditional financial institutions, as well as for a lot of fintechs or digital banks we work for. Obviously the fintechs and digital banks, they're set up much better from a technological point, but often the main focus, and rightfully so, is really on the front end, on making sure that the mobile apps and the client interaction is working seamlessly and has a great UI, but often the regulatory compliance and the heavy lifting behind the scenes in the back office gets a bit forgotten. And that's where we really come in, and we are experienced. And obviously we have this scalable system, which is regulatory compliant, which can make sure that the data is consistent, that things flow nicely between the different modules and channels, all the way from obviously, let's say, digital payment channels, credit scoring, through accounting to the loans and so forth. And we make sure that the data is consistent and that the system can have the ability to connect to certain touch points or open banking solution, should that be required. Obviously from, I think, a general market side, and obviously taking the consumer view, I think it's great that open banking is being pushed. I think there is that is really making things much easier for the ultimate, the clients. And I think there are some countries, for example, I've seen in India, where huge progress has been made for the clients in terms of accessibility of financial service and very low cost of transactions, which definitely just help the economy to become more digital and have more digital payments. So very happy to see that push from regulators around the world, and we're working closely with our clients to support them to comply with this and also make sure that they get the benefits, not just of sharing their data, but also having access to clients' data from other players, from commercial banks or traditional credit card companies and so forth.
What is the main differentiator of Radian as compared to its adversaries?
Well, I believe in the space of core banking system, we have a very unique approach in the sense that we partner with our customers. Even our business model is set out to be really incentivized in the same direction as they are, as we want to make sure that we can support them, do the heavy lifting on the back end, do it in the most efficient way possible to allow them to focus on their differentiation to their clients and their scalability. So at Radian, obviously, we have world-class technology, which is very secure, scalable, and interoperable. And that from day one, since now almost 10 years. And at the same time, we do put a lot of effort on really understanding the business of our customers, so we can support them both through functionality as well as through advice and industry best practices on how to best run their business. And the fact that we're operating across many different countries on different continents, we can actually cross-pollinate our customers, and we can give them insights on how to best solve a problem, as we have already seen this being solved in different markets. So I'd say that's really our main advantage. Working with well-performing financial institutions, and it really doesn't matter, is that a traditional 40-year-old rural bank, or is that a new venture-funded high-growth startup giving out loans, offering a wallet, offering savings products or investment products. That doesn't matter, because ultimately this one platform we have, it's so flexible and so interoperable that any type of financial business can profit from it.
I understand that Raygen have worked with the cloud core banking rollout for Cantilan Bank, a rural bank located at the southern part of the Philippines, in collaboration with Asian Development Bank, which has been recognized as a paragon of success and role model for aspiring cloud banking adopters in the country. How was the experience like, and what are its relevant takeaways?
Yeah, so that was a very unique project, from what I've heard, not just in the Philippines, but across whole of Southeast Asia. We were actually the first cloud-based core banking platform to get approved by any type of central bank for any type of regulated financial institution. So in the Philippines, more specifically, the regulation to run a cloud-based core banking system was in place since 2012 already. It's just no one dared to actually push through with the application process. So thanks to the help of Asian Development Bank and our customer Cantilan Bank, we were able to be the first cloud-based core banking system which got approved by any regulator within this area. So obviously there was a lot of heavy lifting required, as this was really uncharted territory. There was a regulatory sandbox in place. We worked closely with the central bank to make sure that even a lot of the traditional central bank requirements, which were built really for on-premise system and physical interaction, that they got reviewed and adjusted for data being available online in real time and so forth. So definitely a lot of hard work, but it also definitely paid off, as we managed to really break this barrier, and also the common misconception that cloud is not even possible for regulated financial institutions. And obviously it helped us to gain a big advantage in the Philippines, as we were the first ones, and we have now like many years of actually getting these regulated institutions up and running. And we can see that even today that that supports us, not just for these traditional rural banks, but also for a lot of new players like digital lenders, online lenders, fintechs, and so forth, who are also now getting into a sphere where they get regulated from one side or another. And we're very happy that we can support them with our experience on the regulations and the different things they need to comply with in the Philippines, but also in other countries. And the other things is obviously running through that a couple of years ago, it also helped us as a company grow and become more sophisticated and make sure that we can properly serve regulated financial institutions in a reliable and scalable manner.
Apart from the Cantilan success story, Julian, you may also want to share with our podcast listening audience the other significant milestones for Raygen from a digital banking initiative is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, since this first rural bank went live on our platform, obviously many things happened. So we can clearly see a trend that there is more and more digital players as part of our customers. So fintechs, digital banks, online lenders. Where APIs before were something we were often pushing, now it's, I think a lot of institutions are realizing that you cannot do anything without interoperability. So we're seeing a nice uptake in terms of usage of our connectors of these APIs, where institutions use our system as a flexible core and then integrate to what other third-party services they might require. And that could be third-party payment channels, remittances. We've seen integrations to the national payment network in terms of online transfers, as well as for cards and ATMs. Obviously, a variety of different customer-facing apps, web apps, to social media, other marketing channels for loan origination, but then also to credit bureaus and different type of scoring services, as well as collections. So really, like, the whole workflow you have in a financial institution, it can be enhanced through other digital tools. And the beauty is that we see especially a lot of our successful customers really being able to almost completely remove the human element from the lending or deposit taking process. And I mean, the quite interesting thing is as well that especially after looking back the last 12, 15 months with COVID, we've seen some of these innovative customers really perform exceptionally well and have crazy growth numbers despite this quite difficult period, because they have access to all their data. They could react quickly, stop lending, reassess, see which are the profitable markets they should go in or stay in, and then actually up the prices in terms of lending because they were the only ones actually lending at the time. And quite a few of them have seen their best quarters in history, Q3, Q4, 2020, which for some other institutions were really the darkest periods because they just couldn't react quickly and they were still trying to understand what's happening to them, while others were already going on full attack mode and really opening up the vaults and lending out to the segments which were promising and they were, where they could see sustainable business happening.
What is the adaptability ratio that you have observed on the cloud banking services with software as a service or SaaS in the Asia Pacific as compared to other regions?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, so we, from the tales of different central bankers from other countries in Southeast Asia, we got confirmation that really, like, we were at the forefront and we were the first one to really digitalize into the cloud the full core banking system of a regulated institution in the region. So definitely, I think we're there on the forefront. We see things obviously accelerating. I think everyone is realizing that on-premise is dead and it's not even a question of cloud or not. It's just anyone who's serious, I think, will only go in the cloud. And we've seen that with some of the biggest banks in the world happening now as well. The question is more like who as a partner can serve you best. And I think there, the devil's obviously in the detail. Even our solution, it's not made for everyone. We're looking for partners who fit us, who have the right DNA, where we can see that we're working in the right direction together and where we'll still be aligned a couple of years down the road, as these decisions are obviously major decisions, which are not just taken for a year or two. It's really changing the foundation of your banking institution, and you want to make sure you find the right partner so this foundation can stay in place over the next 5 or 10 years, and you don't need to change it out every 2 years, because that's obviously very painful. It's very expensive in terms of time, distraction, and so forth. So what we're seeing is that a lot of institutions are realizing they need a flexible, scalable platform as the foundation for their financial institution, and then they can experiment and innovate on top of that. If you don't have a stable foundation, every experiment is causing shockwaves basically and destabilizing what you have built up. But if you have a very solid foundation, you can experiment on top, and even if you're heading in the completely wrong direction for a couple of weeks, you can realize that and then quickly adjust, correct, and make sure that you're again heading in the right direction. And yeah, we see especially from a lot of the digital players that they appreciate the stability. And I think that's what is supporting really the move towards the cloud, because a lot of institutions are just realizing that they don't have the resources or they don't want to spend the time and money on managing servers and so forth. So it's inevitable and everyone is going in the direction. I think now the question is, yeah, who's finding the right partner who can offer the most flexible and scalable system? so that you don't have to change every couple of years, especially as you're growing fast. And so you can focus on your core business.
What do you think are the challenges of digitalization at this point in time, Julian?
I think there's different challenges at different levels. It depends also on the country. So I think there's countries who are really far ahead in terms of digital payment channels. There's others who are behind, both in terms of adoption as well as having actually a centralized payment network. So I think that's something which has to be resolved. Same as standardization between different players and systems. We talked earlier on a bit about open banking. And then looking internally into fintechs and banks or banking institutions. I think a big challenge is it's twofold. So for traditional institutions, it's obviously just actually digitalizing, going all the way, making sure people can sign up online for a loan, repay the loan online, have to follow up online. I think that's the challenge there. And then for the fintechs and digital institutions, we're actually seeing the opposite. We're seeing that there is such a big emphasis on digitalization that the whole offline or real life part gets forgotten. So we're seeing great successes in terms of fintechs being able to disperse huge amounts of money to millions of clients very quickly. But I think any financial institution is more in a collections business than in a loan disbursement business. And I think that's where the full digitalization, especially talking about the markets of financial inclusion, where collection is often forgotten and where I'd say there is maybe a goal or there's an over-digitalization and the whole real life element gets forgotten. So we're seeing a lot of our customers, especially the ones who have been running fully digital without any human interaction, especially in the financial inclusion segment, that they are including offline components, such as their agents who are there in a specific village or in a mall, or they have their own staff for collections, or they put up their offices to really show their logo and also show to their clients that they're real, they're there. And it's not just, they're not just repaying to their phone or to an app, they're paying to an actual company or an actual person. And that really seems to help a lot in terms of establishing these digital players and making sure that they can recover all the loans. And that's where we work closely with them, because often, obviously, the clients are in very remote areas. So although you can maybe disperse a loan online and people are generally online and they expect that you are online, not everything can always happen online. So we often, like for agents or the field staff, we support them also to work offline if they really go to remote areas, or in case they give out agricultural loans, which are outside of the bigger towns. And basically we combine the best of both worlds, right? On one side, being highly efficient, having automated scoring, loan origination, disbursements, and so forth, digital client interaction, but at the same time supporting them with the high touch elements, which are required at certain parts of the process or in certain situations of a loan cycle.
While the benefits of cloud migration are quite compelling, it doesn't come up without certain risks that somehow needs to be addressed. How do you think we can mitigate the underlying circumstance?
Well, yeah, obviously there is a risk to cloud, as I think there is a risk to any type of technology. So I don't think, again, it's a question of cloud or not cloud anymore. Ultimately, if you want to take part in today's economy, you got to be digital in one way or another, which means no matter where you host your systems, you got to connect it to the internet and to other third-party services and channels. So I think it's about the question, who can guarantee you the most solid and secure package? And I mean, what we're seeing in the industry, that obviously companies such as ours who offer this as software as a service, including the hosting, the maintenance, making sure the servers are running, are up to date, are secure, and are scaling, that we obviously can invest much more and have much more focus on making sure that this is secure and always up and running and highly available, rather than if everyone is managing this in their own basement. So it's just a matter of scaling operations and basically pooling investments from many customers into us making sure that there's the highest level of security possible, rather than everyone trying to do that on their own. I often compare it to taxi companies, right? You don't have every little taxi company producing their own cars. You make sure you go to an expert and you buy them from a big car manufacturer. And it's a bit the same here with a core banking system.
What do you think should be our realistic expectation for the bank of the future?
In the bank of the future, I think there's many different models which are possible, but we're seeing a clear trend that everything goes will become more automated, and through automation also more personalized. But I think traditionally banks, because everything is done manually, everything has to somehow fit in a process, and things are very standardized. But through having more information about a client, about their habits and their preferences, I think a lot of things can be personalized in an automated level. We're also seeing that the clients are not as price sensitive as it sometimes seems. So it's not necessarily only about where can I get the best interest rate, or where can I get the cheapest loan or the lowest transaction fees. People do actually value their own time and service. So I do feel that no matter is it like at the highest level in private banking or in financial inclusion, that people are willing to pay a bit more for a certain institution or a certain bank or a fintech, which can actually offer a better service or a more reliable service, because ultimately it's people's savings or money you're dealing with. So they really want to feel good about where that money resides or from who they're getting a loan. So I think that's definitely an aspect which will become more and more relevant, especially as for the financial inclusion segment, the high touch elements disappear in terms of the human touch. It will be replaced by a digital personalization, and people are able to see the different service levels, and they're willing to pay for that. And then if you look at it from a client point of view, obviously it will be driven towards big aggregators. Now, is that a super app, or is that just fintech, or even a bank which can just access as many or offer as many different products and services as possible? But ultimately, clients don't want to deal with one app for the loan, one for the deposit, one for the transfers. They want to have everything in one. They want to be able to access their money and then use their money in the same context. And obviously that includes other aspects such as insurance, e-commerce, buy now, pay later, or whatever other services are out there. So definitely there will be more and more of a consolidation happening.
How would you describe a seamless digital banking experience and its relative influence to a gratifying customer journey?
Well, a seamless digital banking experience, I think it's one where the customer feels valued and where the customer's time is not wasted. Also, it's about transparency, both in terms of the process. So I know, like, if I download this app, like, what happens? What do I need to do to actually become a client or to apply for a loan? As well as about transparency on fees and costs. So banks have to basically make sure that things go smooth for the client, that they're not bothered with other cumbersome things. And I think what banks or fintechs can learn from is just how do other services which you can consume online, how does their customer journey look like? How does their user experience look like? So if today, I don't know, you want to buy something on the App Store, this is relatively efficient and smooth. So, or the way you have movies available instantly on Netflix, or you have songs available instantly on Spotify, I think that's also what people will start expecting from financial services. Why should I wait 3 days until my loan gets approved if I can just go online and I'm used to getting the movie instantly, or I can go on Amazon and order something, will be there next day, right? So definitely, I think that the expectations in terms of service level and immediate availability of services there. And so I think that's the main focus points bank need to have, is constantly think about how to improve the customer experience and how to make sure that things go as smoothly and there's as little friction and with that possibility for drop off of clients.
Given your considerable experience regarding digital initiatives with Aradian, any word of advice that you can give with regards to this subject matter?
Well, I think for financial institutions who want to digitalize or who want to outsource part of their digitalization efforts or part of their back end and heavy lifting, I think the biggest advice I can give is, like, don't believe everything, because there are so many people out there who will just tell you what you want to hear. But ultimately it's not true and you're stuck in like a 2 or 3 year implementation nightmare. So do your homework, take your time, make sure you talk to existing partners of whoever you choose as a partner, verify claims, and see with your own eyes what can actually be done and how it might work for you specifically. And the other thing is, look for someone who has a similar DNA to you, because I think traditionally when people buy software in the on-premise and customization world, people needed to make sure that all the functionality they will ever need is included in the system. But with cloud-based system, that's really not necessary anymore. You've got to make sure that a system fits you quite well and it can support your operations. But what's even more important is, do you have the same DNA as the company selling you that software? And are you confident that your path and the path of that company is aligned over the next 5 to 10 years? If that path is not aligned, even if today you will get the perfectly suitable software, I don't think it's a good choice to go with that solution, because innovation circles are becoming shorter and shorter. And even if someone 2 years ago would have told us how, for example, COVID has accelerated digital payments and so forth, maybe a lot of people wouldn't have believed it. And if we look back like 2-3 years ago, maybe a lot of the solutions we're using today, we haven't been using or we couldn't have seen on the horizon. So same for today, right? We don't know yet what's out there in 2 years. So you need someone who, no matter what happens, goes in the same direction as you, so they can support you with whatever happens in the market in 2 years. And you're not stuck with just what you can see with your own eyes today.
Are there any initiatives that you're preoccupied with, Julian, that you would like to share with our podcast listening audience? And what are the most logical way of reaching out or contacting you?
Well, initiatives, we have lots of ongoing initiatives, right? I think there's obviously a lot of movement around using a variety of data points for proper credit scoring and to really make loan origination and onboarding more efficient, as well as a heavy focus on collections for financial institutions now, especially during the still ongoing pandemic in most countries. So we're working a lot behind the scenes with our existing partners to make things as smooth as possible and to use these times of crisis to really accelerate further and get ahead of the competition. And that's what we'll keep doing. And I think soon we'll see quite a few announcements around some of the things we have in work and where we're currently experimenting or piloting with our customers. I'd say mainly around the scoring part and also the collection, which people are realizing is more and more important. If you look at it from an end client point of view, I think there will be an accelerated growth of the strong institutions who are well set up, but there will be also a lot of traditional financial institutions which will go out of business, or who de facto are already out of business. It's just not visible yet in their, on their balance sheet, because the rules have been watered down during this crisis. So I think for anyone who is a bank customer, make sure you go with the players who are actually growing and who have a sustainable model, because quite a few of the others might not be around anymore in the near future. I think that's my main preoccupation. The market is obviously still growing, right? There's still so many people who don't have access to financial services, but it's beautiful to see that really technology and also this unfortunate crisis has actually opened a lot of people's eyes, and people are not afraid anymore to trust their phone with transactions, making payments, seeing their balance there rather than on pen and paper. So that definitely has accelerated a lot of things. And I think it's pushing a trend in the right direction, because it's bringing competition for financial services and banking, even in the remotest area. So a lot of institutions had their traditional geographic monopoly, but now with even a lot of people in these remote areas trusting the internet to bank and signing up from Facebook or from Instagram to some of these new services, it's bringing competition to these traditional players. And competition is good for the consumer, because it ultimately increases transparency and it drives down prices. So I think for the consumer, it's definitely a good trend. And I think there will be more and more innovative services by institutions who are able to work efficiently and pass down these cost savings to the end clients, while obviously having a heavily improved level of service and usability. Yeah, and if anyone would like to get in touch with us, just feel free to contact us either social media or our website. You can find our email or phone number, and happy to get in touch if I can help out, or if you have any questions following this conversation.
Thanks so much, Julian, for sharing us your valuable insights on core banking services on the cloud. We wish you all the best and more successful digital initiatives in the future.
Well, thank you for the great conversation and for having me. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Sincere gratitude to Mr. Julian Orlane on sharing us his remarkable views on banking services on the cloud. We would like to hear from you. Share us your thoughts regarding our topics, and send us a message on the Anchor Voice message box. Your message would end up on our future podcast episode. Make sure you never miss any episodes of FinCircle by clicking the subscribe button, or follow us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Amazon Podcasts, and anchor.fm. You can also reach us on our website at fincircle.wordpress.com and our Facebook page at FinCircle Podcast. This concludes our podcast episode today. Thank you for listening on FinCircle. This is Ed Angeles. Let's catch up again soon.